Heute haben wir eine Special-Folge vom International Journalism Festival in Perugia. Auf einem der Panel habe ich Sudeshna Chanda kennengelernt. Und sie hat eine Diskussion moderiert, bei der es darum ging, dass Exilmedien nicht nur ein Trend sind. Also habe ich mich im Anschluss mit ihr getroffen und sie hat auch noch eine Kollegin mitgebracht und ich habe den beiden ein paar Fragen gestellt. Viel Spaß mit dieser Bonusfolge aus Perugia. And now I will switch into English. So we are starting with Sudeshna. And would you be so kind to introduce yourself?
Hello, I am Sudeshna. I'm from India. I currently work in the Netherlands for an exiled media outlet as the program officer and marketing manager. I am interested in understanding the impact that exiled media has on the world because I've always been interested in journalism and what it means for a democratic world. And the exiled media landscape is a completely new space for me, but also that much more impactful when it comes to journalism. And I'm also very interested in media innovation, like journalism, newsroom innovation. So that's also the hat that I put on when I walk into my office every day and I try to understand how, despite being in exile and despite being in a foreign setting, so to say, how can you still be innovative to reach audiences that are far from you? How can you still be innovative to create impact, especially in environments where this impact is absolutely needed?
This is also the reason why you are here in Perugia, because it's here all about innovation and journalism. So, Cynthia, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Cynthia Membreño. I come from Nicaragua in Central America. I work in Confidencial, an independent news media outlet that has been around for 27 years. And I joined the team 8 years ago as a reporter. And then I did journalism for 4 years, talking to people. I love to get to know the stories of women and men who were going through different situations, politically, economically, or any other aspect of, for example, entrepreneurship, just to report stories. I love that. But then I thought, I would like to do something different. I would like to get to know more about the business side of media and how to make a media outlet sustainable. I want to challenge myself. I want to do something that I didn't necessarily study at school. And so when I joined Confidencial for the second time around, because I had a gap year from journalism to figure out what I wanted to do, I had the idea of running a membership program without not knowing that membership was a big challenge, but also very fulfilling because I loved to connect with people. And so I am doing that in campaigns that support Confidencial to reach sustainability with the support of readers. So I am doing something different than what I studied, but it's always connected to people and the readers and a cause. So,
how many members do you have?
We right now have about 600 members, paying members and non-paying members. So what we have is a community that contributes with their time, their opinions, and also in the same community, people who help Confidencial financially.
And how are you financed?
Zamani Media. So Zamani Media is a not-for-profit organization that is mostly donor-funded. But in the recent years, we also have advertising revenue that comes in. But we're also looking at reader funding, and that's actually how I met Cynthia, because I found out that Cynthia was doing some amazing work related to membership at Confidencial. And at this around this time, I was researching on membership models, but there wasn't anything that I felt I could replicate for an exile media outlet, and then I met Cynthia. So currently we're also experimenting with reader revenue. We're not doing a membership model yet, but we're trying out different donation and support methods that do not require audiences to share any identifiable information, because also in our case, and I suppose it's quite similar to Nicaragua, Zamaneh Media is censored in Iran, and therefore it is a security issue for us to have registered members, because then they would have to share information with us about themselves that we would rather not have, at least at the moment, till we figure out how to do it better. So for now, we're looking at anonymous reader revenue methods. I'm experimenting with them. It's a fun journey, because something that Cynthia and I have also spoken about often is that journalists, for all the good that they're doing for the world, are also reluctant to change. As is any human being, change does not come easily. But in newsrooms, change is much harder as well.
How did you cover the recent protests in the Iran?
I am not the best person to answer that, because I'm not a journalist at the organization. But I know that from day one, our journalists were very involved. We were also receiving videos from inside the country. We did daily coverage. Something that Zamaneh Media is moving towards is analytical news and not just daily news coverage. What we aspire to do, and we've been doing for quite a few years, is giving context to anything that happens. So this protest is happening, okay, but what is the socio-economic context behind it? What is the what are the gender and ethnic relations that are involved in creating these in these relationships that lead to these protests? So one of the things beyond our daily coverage that we did was also looking into what does this mean for the future of Iran? What does this mean for how women are now standing up for themselves in Iran? What does this mean for the political structure in Iran? So also putting, not just covering the protest, but putting the protest in the context of the politics of Iran, of the socioeconomic conditions in Iran. So that's something that we've done that I think has been lacking also in a lot of the coverage that I've read about.
And in Germany, we have the impression that the revolution in Iran is led by women. Would you say it's a purely female revolution?
Again, given that I'm not from Iran and I'm not a journalist at the organization, I do not think that I'm the best person to answer this. But from how I see this as a woman, but also from outside, I think women have a massive role to play in it. But I also think that it says something about where the country is at right now, generally, like where the youth of the country is at. Because you also see, especially with the in all the protest videos that you see, there's just so much young blood in there. Like so many young people, irrespective of sexual and gender identities, going there. Well, maybe I should not say irrespective, but because there is definitely a marginalized angle to this. But just the sheer amount of young people, even minors, and that's also why we've read a lot about minors, like people under the age of 18 who've been killed in the protest. But the fact that young people under the age of 18 have gone out also says something about the political awareness of the generation of Iran right now, beyond the women of Iran, I think. So there is definitely a massive female-led or a woman angle to it, but I also think there's a youth angle to it that is often not looked at.
How difficult is it to survive as media in exile?
It is incredibly challenging. For example, for Confidencial in Nicaragua, what we experienced is that when we went into exile, we didn't necessarily have the legal structure to be commercial as we used to be. So then you have to decide, are you going to build a company, or are you going to be a nonprofit? What are you going to do, and what advantages do you have in each of the models? We were sustainable before the political crisis of Nicaragua. And now we rely a lot on grants. And we used to have a TV program that was sustainable as well. And then that TV program had to move to YouTube because we were expelled from TV. So it's just about learning you know, like a traditional media learning to just quickly react to publish the content in digital platforms and to understand how does the algorithm work, how do you pay, how do you get paid, how each how much each visualization pays you, etc. Like, it's a world that you don't necessarily understand in the beginning, but that you learn a lot by doing. So while you're in Excel, you have to think about being creative and trying to solve the problems at the moment and look at what other media outlets are doing internationally so that you see how and what can you replicate. So in our case, we are trying to diversify our revenue with the membership program, the donation campaigns, with YouTube, with, you know, clients in the new countries that we're in. So we're trying to do everything to make it work. It's definitely a learning process, and I think one of the key aspects of thriving like we have done is to not be afraid of failure, which is something that a lot of journalists are, that they're scared. Not journalists, media organizations, I would say. And just to have this, yeah, and people are, but just to have this mentality of, I don't know, but I have to try in order to know. I think that takes a lot of, it takes to be humble and to realize that in order to explore new media revenue streams, then you have to take the leap.
Oh, no, I just wanted to add that I think humble, but I think also just taking yourself less seriously is also needed, because we think, oh, if this goes wrong, nobody will ever read my newspaper. But people don't have that attention span. You make a mistake, you correct it tomorrow, they'll move on from it. You know, we often take ourselves way too seriously. This is going to be earth-shattering, but it's not. So, yeah, that's just something I wanted to add. That just make a mistake.
You started recently a podcast and established a website. What do you aim with this sort of small network?
I think this is very exciting. We started the podcast as this... So I was going through this creative... what is it called? Like a desert, where I wanted to do something creative, but in the role that I have does not allow for creative work. And at the same time, I was looking at all of these membership models and all of that. And I was really frustrated by the fact that there just was not enough information about Exile Media's doing any of these things, anything, absolutely anything. Like, just to figure out what is an Exile Media outlet doing, if I would Google, I would not come across anything. And I'd have to find people to talk to about particular topics, and you'd get like 15-20 minutes of their time. And then what do you learn from that? So Cynthia and I started meeting to talk about the membership model that Cynthia was implementing at the time, or is implementing now. And just in one of the, at the same time, I was going through this phase of, ooh, podcasts. My news was through podcasts, and I would listen to like productivity podcasts, like all sorts of podcasts. And I found value in that audio nature of information, that I could be doing something else. This is also a toxic productive behavior that, oh, I want to do multiple things at once. But anyway, I enjoyed them. So one evening we were just having coffee, and I was like, you know, we were both frustrated about the same thing. And I said, what if we just created a podcast? And Cynthia was like, yeah, next year I might be free. Let's touch base again next year to see if we can do this. Sounds fun. It'll be fun to just on our own time. At that point, we were just talking about doing this on our own time besides our job, just to do this, just the two of us as friends, to reach out to different media outlets and just talk to them about different experiences they've had with different topics, from digital security to psychosocial support and stuff like that. And then that idea grew. I spoke to my team, who I have to say this, my team was really supportive when I mentioned this, and I said, should I just do it this on my time? And they were like, no, this sounds like a fun thing. You do it on our time. You do it on your work time and see what Cynthia can do and what anyone else is interested in doing. So that's how that came to be. And then we reached out to Matthew Casper from Maidan TV, who was also really, he was like, yeah, let's do something together. And we're also, all three of us, we get along really well, because I think we're similar personalities, but also different in that we complement each other. But we all have this passion for the work that we're doing, the space that we're in, and we have this creative knack. Like, all three of us are always like, how can this be more fun? What innovative thing can we do here? So podcasts seem to be that one thing that fit into that need to do something creative while talking about our passions. And that's how the podcast came to be, at least. And I'll let you talk about the network further.
Okay, so, I mean, I have to clarify that we have never done podcasts. So it's this mentality that I talk about, like, let's give it a try. Let's see how it goes. I have worked in journalism. These guys are media professionals. So let's try to do something together that we think it's important and that we enjoy. So out of the conversation of the podcast, I think at some point there was a point in which we said, we don't not only need the podcast to share this information, how about we make some sort of network organization? We really, I mean, it was just brainstorming. We said, if we try to organize something so that we can share all the information that we have to other people who are going through the same situation as us and that maybe don't know where to get ideas, just to get inspired. Sometimes you want to get inspired. Sometimes you want to find solutions. Sometimes it's like, if you need to write an article, you read a book to get inspired. So, like, the podcast and the organization is a safe space that we want to create to people, to talk to people and try to provide them with tips or just the anecdote. Look, I went through this. Maybe there's a way in which you can do it faster because I already know a lot of tips that you can apply, even if you go to the same country, for example, like Nicaraguan media outlets, or if, like, how did Radio Samané, won the battle against internet censorship. I already look up to them because I know that when these things happen in Nicaragua, I have a media outlet that has enough information to give me on how to set up a mirror website. So if I can do the same for Radio Samané or for other media outlets in other parts of the world, why not? It doesn't cost me anything, and I want them to thrive faster and better than we did because we didn't have other people to talk to.
And the last question, what are the next concrete steps? Let's say, like, we are right now in the end of April for May, June, July, until summer, until autumn 2023.
So we're definitely doing an in-person meeting because how this worked is the three of us got together and then we met Ivan from Medusa and then he joined and then we met Ula from DVB, Democratic Voice of Burma, and he joined. At different stages of the formation of this network, different conversations were had, but it was never in one space with all of the members together. So we definitely want to do an in-person meeting where all of the members get together. We spend 2 days dedicated to the existential questions about the network. What do we want from the network? How can the network serve this space? Including creating those concrete steps also about what are the next steps for the network? Who do we reach out to? What kind of stuff should we do? So that's on our agenda to actually meet in August or September, create this space so the five of us can meet and talk. And then we also want to, and I mentioned this in the session as well, that would love to figure out a way to get a lay of the land to understand what exile media outlets need, because at the moment we are focusing on similar sized exile medias from different regions. So A, there's no competition, there's no, you know, like, I can't share this information because they're my direct competitor, but also it does not take a lot of resources for any of us because this is something we're doing out of passion on the side. It is a part of our job, but it's still not our full-time job. So if the concern that we have at the moment is if we expand too quickly, this will get out of hand, it will lose its value. And it is a grassroots thing for us. We do want it to be completely value-driven and mission-driven that is coming from the network. So at the moment, what we want to do is see what other similar networks, organizations are out there, but also dissimilar organizations, up and I shouldn't say up and coming, but media outlets that are going into exile or are currently in exile but don't know where to move to, what country to move to, what is a good space for them to be at. So get a sense of all of that so we can then determine how NEMO can actually benefit this. Because what we don't want is for the five of us to dictate what exile media needs. Because that is exactly what we're trying to avoid. Like one major corporation or one donor deciding this is the need for now. How do we fix it? So we do want to understand what is needed.
Thank you very much, Sadeshna, Cynthia, for your time.
Thank you, Paulina. Thank you
very much. Thank you for having us. Yes.
We really appreciate this.